Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Connected Studios for January 28th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the Australian Open. This week's podcast is brought to you by Top Notch Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for the upcoming BNP Paribas Open as well as the Miami Open. Parsa, my friend, we are back. It's frigid temperatures out here in the East Coast, New York, Toronto, doesn't really matter. But, you know, the sunshine in Australia is still there, and what a tournament it was for Naomi Osaka and Novak Djokovic. They claimed their second and 15th Grand Slams, respectively, at the demise of Petra Kvitova. Great story for her to see her back in the finals, as well as Rafael Nadal, who was going for his second career Grand Slam, trying to become the only guy in the Open era to win every major at least twice. But obviously he wasn't able to do so. So what were your thoughts? Let's start with the women's side, Parsa, and see what, how you thought that transpired. I mean, Osaka now has won two slams in a row, which is fantastic. She's the number one player in the world. I think she's probably has to be, number one with the least amount of events won, right? She's won like three tournaments, and she's number one in the world, but they're two majors. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, Osaka is quite incredible. It's something that is, she's polarized by the intensity of the crowd, by the energy of the crowd, and she just plays better. She has had a good run after the U.S. Open, but the way now it's transpired and she got back to a Grand Slam final again was even a great achievement. And then for her to go ahead and all the way and win it, we definitely have a rising superstar, and great for her in that the way the U.S. Open happened and people, it was sort of controversial and all that. She came out and what an incredible way to win it too, with her having the love 40 on Kvitova's serve to win, triple championship points, to then lose five straight points, then to get broken, then for Kvitova to hold, then to get broken again and lose the set in a mere 10, 12 minutes, she was on the brink of winning. And then for her to rebound the way she did, to then come back and do it all over again in the third set was really just extremely impressive. And, we have I don't want to even say a budding superstar. She's a superstar for sure, and she's going to be here for a very, very long time.
So when we look at Osaka right now, two majors, very young, right? Is she even 20 yet? Was she 20, 21, 19? I don't know her exact age, but let me look that up while we're talking. But with that being said, is this a player that you're seeing is going to be, winning like 10 Grand Slams, 20 Grand? Like what? She's 21, so she's 21 years old. What do you see in her future? Do you see her becoming a force on clay as well with her game? Wimbledon, obviously, I could see her doing something. U.S., she's won, and Australia. So, obviously, she's proven that she's dynamite on hard courts. I believe she won Indian Wells, too, right? So, I mean, these are three major tournaments. Can't get much bigger than that in terms of the hard court stuff. So, I don't know. I think, for me, she's definitely a force. Our writer, Charles, took on an article today saying, "Welcome to the Naomi Osaka era." And I think I couldn't agree more with him on that one because, she's the player of the moment right now in the WTA. And I really believe that she's going to, do some great stuff. How do you view her game right now as it translates to the next major as we move forward to Roland Garros? What do you think about that?
Yeah, she's showing the ability to put more spin on the ball. I think that's what needs to happen. But more important than that is her movement around the court. Now, on a slower surface like Indian Wells, she also won that title last year. So I'm not sure, if it's going to be anything about the hitting, it's going to be more about the movement. And I think, I don't know if she's ready today in order to go and win Roland Garros, but I think in the future, as she gets more comfortable in the dirt, I think she'll have opportunities to do so and to win like the other great athletes do. It remains to be seen, obviously, but I would say that the footing would be an issue, and thus not allowing her to strike as big and having to put more shape on the ball and then her getting pushed around more. But, you know, it also depends on the conditions at Roland Garros. If they're faster, it could bode very well for her. She's serve is huge. And so, you know, she should be able to hold serve when others will be struggling to do so. So I think she's definitely got a chance. She's definitely going to be a top five favorite. I don't know if she'll be a top two favorite like she would be for me going into the faster court slams.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree on that. And, you know, I was thinking about something when I was watching, you know, this year's women's event that is starting to become interesting for me once again. You got Sabalenka, you got Amanda Anevimosa, you got a lot of these young players that are coming up and doing some good things. Obviously, Osaka, you got Serena still in the mix. You know, you have Kvitova who came back. What an amazing story for her after what transpired for her over the last, 18 months or so. And I just think that the women's tour is definitely in a much better place than it was, I would say, maybe a year and a half ago. You're getting, not necessarily, I mean, we're getting a lot of different winners. I think this is, I mean, Osaka kind of broke that trend, right? Because they had like 8 different winners. Now she's won 2 in a row in terms of majors. But I think that in terms of, the players that are winning, you have these young players that are a little bit feistier, got some attitude. You know, even Bianca Andreescu, the young Canadian girl, she's up to like 68 in the world. She's playing really well, so watch out for her. I think they got a little bit of that edge, and I think that's kind of what you need. You know, Sabalenka's like that. And so I really think that we're going to see some good stuff on the WTA tour as well as, at the majors with the ITF events going forward. But it's going to be very interesting for me to see how Osaka embraces her, her fame now, because she's completely, blown up. Japan is going to be next level. I mean, she's probably a rock star there, if not even more so than she was before. And now as she moves forward, she's got, like $10 million in prize money. She's going to make so much in endorsement. She's got a very unique look and she's very nice. But maybe she's a little bit too nice. I don't know. I don't know how it works. I mean, Federer also had that. Federer's kind of like that too, right? He's a nice guy, but then when he gets on court, he wants to kill you. So she's kind of, I feel like she's in the same vein. She's beat Serena a bunch of times. She's beat pretty much everybody else. So it's going to be good. I think it's good for the women's tour. And hopefully she can stick around and have some level of dominance, but still be challenged as well too. So Parsa, as we move now to the men's side, we had Novak Djokovic claiming his 15th major, as I alluded to earlier, his seventh record-breaking tournament title down under, beating Nadal in, what was it, like 2 hours and a few minutes? What was it, 3-2 and 3? An absolute shellacking. The last time I saw something like that, I believe, was the 2008 French Open Finals, when Nadal took Federer to the woodshed. He won like 4-2-0. And then after that, they had that epic at Wimbledon where it was like the greatest match ever. So, Parsa, let's start off with this because we got a lot to talk about on this one. And we got a lot to talk about in terms of, the GOAT debate, the competitiveness of men's tennis. And then we'll wrap up how the rest of the year looks as we head into Indian Wells and Miami. So what were your thoughts overall on the finals and how Djokovic took care of Nadal?
I mean, it was an absolute beatdown. Yes. I can't say much more other than, you got two great champions that are going head to head, and there was one that was at the level beyond the next level.
Yes.
And I can't really, say much more. Anyone who watched it, it was a absolutely awesome display by Novak for the last 2 weeks. Medvedev gave him some problems early in the tournament, and he really was going toe-to-toe with him, but you could see he ran out of steam in that match, and he just doesn't have the fitness that Novak now has again. And it's almost virtually impossible. The way he was just taking his Nadal's forehand and just bashing it down his throat. It was incredible to watch. At the same time, the same token, I really didn't feel like Nadal played his best. But you know, I think a lot of that had to do with the calm serenity that you saw Novak come out with in that final. He just knew he was going to win, or he knew he was going to have the solution or the wherewithal to withstand whatever Nadal brought to him. And Nadal just wasn't as sharp as he normally, you know, is or has been. But I think a large part of that had to do with the heaviness and the pace that Djokovic was playing with, and the serve that he was serving with high, ridiculously high percentages, no unforced errors. And it was an awesome display of dominance and, you know, a great champion, 7 titles.
Yeah, and you know, Parsons, before we got on air, we were talking, you know, after I made my comment, which I'll make again right now, you said, you know, the word loose, and he was just so loose, which is amazing. But, you know, Parsa, we've been doing this for a while. I've been watching tennis for so many years, right? Watch a lot of these amazing guys from Sampras to Federer to even a little bit of Edberg, Courier, you know, into the Federer, Djokovic, Nadal era. I've never seen a guy in the first game of a Grand Slam final come up and hit a scissor kick backhand off the rise cross-court winner in the first game. And this is not a guy like a Kyrgios or a Monfils where he's going to be a clown. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not doing it for that reason. He's not trying to show... He's just saying, like, I woke up completely on the right side of the bed today. You know what I'm saying? I had my vegan stuff. I got some... I'm hydrated. Let's get out there and... Let's see what's going to happen, and I'm feeling amazing. And it was just, I couldn't believe, even the first, if you watch, it's, you know, it's amazing because we watched this, and the first game, like, he came up and he hit this really nice out wide serve, and Nadal chipped it in, and he smacked a forehand down the line, and then just held serve, no problem. And then Rafa serves, and he does that scissor kick stuff, breaks him. He was up 3-0 in like 10 minutes. And it was, I think at that point, Nadal's like, uh-oh. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is not like the last 6 matches where I rolled everybody. I didn't lose a set. I'm a grinder, and I didn't have to even go more than 2 hours basically against my other 6 opponents. Young guys, Tsitsipas, TFO, I mean, you name it, right? And it's like, it was just, it's incredible what Djokovic was able to do, how comfortable he feels on this court, and it's scary good. And I mean, How can you at this point, he's number one in the world right now. He's holding 3 of the 4 majors. He has over 10,000 points. He has basically nothing to defend. You know he's 100% the favorites in Indian Wells and Miami, which are a couple of tournaments that he's owned throughout his career. He can definitely pick up a couple thousand more points there. And then he heads into the clay, which is still to be determined, but he's definitely going to do some good stuff there. And I mean, I don't know. He's standing at 15 now. Fed's at 20. He's 31, turning 32 in a couple months. I mean, Nadal's at 17. We'll get into that in a bit. But Parsa, I mean, just can't say enough good things about Djokovic in this tournament, what he's able to do from the time that he's recovered. I mean, this time last year, he lost to Chung in the 4th round. Then he lost to Benoit Paire and Taro Daniel in Indian Wells in Miami. Lost to Cicinato at the French. Thought he was not going to play tennis anymore. He said, I'm not even going to play on grass. Marion Vlada goes, listen, man, play the grass. He wins Wimbledon, rests his history, and now he's here where he is today. It's just a remarkable story. And I got to give a quick shout-out to Nadal because a couple things within this one, Parsa, and then you can jump in on the Rafa side. So Nadal comes in, hasn't played a tournament since retiring in the semis of the U.S. Open to Delpo. Comes in, makes the finals of the Australian Open. His maybe worst major, even though he's made a bunch of finals. He had some really good stuff to say after the match, and he said, the reason why I lost this match was I felt not as any more nervous than I usually do, but from a defensive position, I wasn't able to create what I needed to create against a guy who's hitting the ball that well. A lot of people, and I said that basically on Twitter, even before Nadal said it, and people are like, oh, this is not, he's not playing his best, he's not playing his best, Djokovic is in his head, all of this stuff. But Parsa, I mean, you've been coaching high-performance tennis, you played a lot, you've done all this stuff throughout your career. If somebody's in your head, why are they in your head? You know what I'm saying? They're in your head because they're good. They've done something to get in your head. Their weight of shot, the way that they construct points, the way they handle your spin, their court positioning, you know, all of this stuff. And for me, going forward, It's not a fluke why Djokovic has gone ahead in their head-to-head. He has a better serve, and he has a better return. And those are the two fundamentally key, most important shots in tennis, right? If you have a good serve and you have a good return, you're probably going to do really well as a tennis player. Because the rest of the stuff is predicated on how well you can start a point from both a serve perspective and a return perspective, right? So just want to see what you think about that in terms of how Nadal, you know, thought that he dealt with it, how Djokovic is in his head, and all that stuff. Go ahead.
I think ultimately that it was, you know, brilliantly said, by the way, by you, that is the difference between the players. And Nadal has tried to address it by serving bigger, by doing better with the plus ones and
exactly.
twos, which is the first ball or the second ball after the serve, and ending points within two shots versus his normal rallying cry. I think, you know, there was that tension there, and I think there is an element of him being in his head, and he was a little confused. If I don't know if anyone else follows along, but when I was watching, I was saying, all right, he's been playing super aggressive, first strike tennis, mm-hmm. The whole tournament, and then he got to Djokovic, and he sort of resorted back to old version of Nadal, but he wasn't fit enough nor in rhythm enough, you know, to play that way, where he's trying to hit the big spin ball and get into these long, arduous rallies. It just didn't, you know, it didn't sit well with me. I think he played his best against Novak in the final there when he was super aggressive, but he didn't play like that all the time. So I think it could be a lesson learned. I hope it is for Nadal that there's just nothing to lose now. He can't go toe-to-toe with him like that off the baseline and on any other court besides a clay court. And so I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. I think the improvements are apparent. He was serving near 120 miles an hour. That's great.
Yes.
He was striking more forehands, you know, more viciously than he ever has in his career. So I think a lot of good things were apparent, and there was definitely some work done. But I think he was stuck in between what he used to do and what he currently is doing now in that final. And I think a large part of that had to do with exactly what you said. I think he knows the level that it takes to beat Novak, and he just didn't trust himself to play that tennis. He trusts himself with what has won him all his Grand Slams, which makes complete sense. So I think that's what we saw, and I think, you know, just like Federer went through this little bit of a stage when he was transitioning his game recently,
yes.
There has to be that one last piece of evidence, like, all right, I just can't play like that anymore. It just doesn't work, so I might as well go out and play my game now. And I think that's what we saw. I hope that's what we saw, because it could make a very interesting year-end race towards the number one position, because as our followers and listeners have heard, you know, I had predicted Djokovic to win this match and to win this tournament, but I am predicting also that Rafa finishes number one in the world at the end of the year. So I think it looks daunting right now, but let's see if this was a learning experience for Rafa, and let's see what he can do come Roland Garros.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the thing is that, you know, I looked at the statistics of the match, and Nadal had he served harder first serves and second serves over Djokovic. He's definitely, I mean, and that's the thing, right? And I was thinking, okay, so Tsitsipas in the semis, he got smoked, and Tsitsipas comes off the court after beating Federer and Bautista Agut, following that up with a great win, saying, I have no idea how to beat this guy, man. He just makes you play bad. He's giving him all of these things, and he was just baffled. And then Djokovic goes into the next match, and he just tunes Nadal. So Tsitsipas, I'm sure he watched that. He's like, okay, well, that's how I got to do it. But he's not playing like Novak. So the thing is, I was watching, you know, that semi, and Tsitsipas obviously is hitting a big ball, smoking the ball on the baseline, and Nadal is just half-volleying it into the open court. But he wasn't able to do that with Djokovic. Is Djokovic hitting it that much deeper? Or because I don't... Can we say that a guy disguises his returns too? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, is it that much harder that he was hitting it than Nadal was in that defensive a position right off the bat after he served? Because
for me, it was just the depth, Nima. It was incredible. I mean, do you see some of the serves? I actually replayed one of them because Nadal swung, and he didn't even make the return in the court, but I just was marveling at how from a split step to one step does Djokovic get his racket outside of the doubles alley. It's like, you know, on the outside, Nadal hit a swinging serve that, you know, was exited the doubles alley of the court, let alone the singles alley, the singles line, and he still got a racket on it. I don't even understand how it was possible. So, you know, it's just one of those things that he's able to swallow up whatever he's given and shoot it out. The difference is that Nadal does the same thing, but Nadal was hitting the ball a foot from the service line, and Djokovic was hitting it a foot inside the baseline. That's ultimately the difference.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, and you could see that Nadal's serve has improved because he had a couple really nice, you know, on the deuce side, those swinging ones down the line, and Djokovic, like, you know, he just got his, like, tried to kind of like a slice return, and Nadal came in and put a forehand away, but far and few between. I don't know. I mean, it's improved, but there's guy like a Medvedev has a better serve. Federer has a better serve. Tsitsipas has a better serve. I mean, as much as Nadal is going to improve his serve, it's never going to be at that level. And that's really what this all comes down to. And I mean, Djokovic is the best returner of all time. And I think when he plays a guy like Federer, I mean, obviously Federer's getting a little bit older now for sure. We'll get to that in a second. But he still has a very good serve. He's got a better serve than Nadal. And that, to me, is why that matchup relatively is a good one for Federer, even though he might not win any more of them, or, you know, he's still down in that head-to-head. But with Rafa, it's, he doesn't have a better serve, and he doesn't have a better return. That's why this, for me, is going to continue to be a losing proposition for him. Maybe clay is an X factor just because he's the best clay court player ever. But for me, there's no way that on a grass or on a hard court, I'm taking Nadal to be the favorite over Djokovic. Now, if he's able to play, you know, 6-7 tournaments in a row without getting injured, which, again, remains to be seen, because he's only completed now 2 hardcore tournaments in the last 12 months, you know, and he's got a bunch coming up. He's playing Acapulco in a couple weeks, and he said he's playing Indian Wells, and he said he's probably not going to play Miami. Then he's going to get ready for Monte Carlo, and then that big swing that he has. So, I don't know, man. I think for me, this is going to be Djokovic's time to really just break out even more. And even though 5 majors is a lot, the form that he has right now, and realistically speaking, we'll get into this, the relative lack of competition that he has, because Federer is not the same player that he was. Nadal is playing very well, but is he going to get injured again? And then if you take those guys out, Murray's retiring, Wawrinka still trying to find his footing, Delpo is coming back, he could be an X factor because he's got a good game. I don't know. I mean, Zverev flamed out again in the 4th round. I have no idea, but let's now, Parsa, we're going to transition into the GOAT debate. So now let's retool that. So, you know, that computer reshuffles. We got Federer still at the top with 20, followed by Nadal at 17, followed now by Djokovic at 15, and Pistol Pete Sampras at 14. First of all, Parsa, is Sampras still in the GOAT debate? Is he relevant still with everything that he achieved throughout his career?
Yeah, I mean, the eras are different, yes. You know, so absolutely, you know, he was an absolutely, utterly dominant player, you know, in terms of when it came to his serving at Wimbledon compared to what his contemporaries were.
Yes.
You know, it's always very hard to compare generations because things were different. You know, now the way the sport is, I mean, there's a clear advantage to the people at the top. You know, I just read, I don't know what article this was about regarding a player, but they're like, all right, well, now they have this person in their, you know, in their, on their team. Now the team is complete, you know. Well, what about the guy who's 50 in the world? He can't have a team. So there's a clear competitive advantage to being a top 5 player and, you know, and the money that comes with it. And so I think, that's happening, and I think that makes a big difference. Where back in the day, you know, it's just hard to compare it, Nima. Basically, that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, and see, so this is, I put up a major couple things on Twitter, and I got some good feedback on it. This is my thoughts, right? So we have the era of, you know, you got Sampras, you got Agassi, you got Courier, you got Chang, you got Bruguera, Moya comes in a little bit, Rios didn't really win any majors, but he was good. You have, Bruguera, you had Quertin, you had guys who were winning 2-3 majors. On top of, you know, Sampras' 14 and Agassi's 8, right? But I remember watching that, and it was just such a, you know, for Sampras to get to 11 and then 12 and then 13 and then, you know what I mean? But, you know, there was times where Federer was winning three slams in a row and Djokovic was winning three slams in a row, and now Djokovic has done it again. These guys just keep racking them up, and they got over 50 majors together. They've made like almost 80 finals in total, right? And then you also have to add in Murray, who, you know, made, I think, 14 or 15 finals. He won three. Wawrinka's made three. Cilic grabbed a cup, grabbed one, and Del Potro grabbed one. Other than that, nobody else has won a Grand Slam, I think, in like 15 years, right? Like 13, like not, it's been just these three, four, five guys, six guys. And it's like, is that an indicator that Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer are that much better than everybody else, and they've just been dominating, and the rest of the guys just haven't been as good? Because if we had a scenario where, you know, let's say Federer had 12 Grand Slams, Nadal had 10 Grand Slams, Djokovic had 8 Grand Slams, and then Milos had a couple, you know, Dimitrov had 3, Berdych had 1 or 2, Del Potro had 2, Wawrinka still had 3, Murray had his 3. You know what I'm saying? It was bunch, like you had 10 or 12 Grand Slam winners. Would that be a better situation for men's tennis? Or is it better the way that it is now, where you have three top-heavy guys who have won, you know, almost 20, you know what I mean, like in the high teens of majors, and the rest of the guys have pretty much nothing? These guys have monopolized it. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, so on the women's side, people are like, oh, there's no dominant figure. And now Osaka's won a couple. You know, last eight have been eight different winners. But if you look from the beginning of 17, it's been basically Federer, Nadal, Djokovic winning everything. They've won the last, I think, 8-9 majors at least. So what does that mean in your opinion? Does that mean that right now we don't have that much competition? Like, or I'm struggling with this one, because I think it's definitely a double-edged sword, right? If you have, like I said, 12 guys who have won at least two majors, yes, that's great, because it's competitive. But if you have three guys who are just not letting those other eight guys win something, then there's something to be said about that as well, right? You got to admire that too.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. It's very hard to, you know, which is better? I mean, does anyone not love, you know, either Nadal, Federer, or Djokovic? I mean, I think there's legions of fans, and, you know, whether it's good or not for the health of the sport, I think it's probably pretty good for everyone. You need somebody to talk about. You know, in every sport they have the superstars that get all, you know, LeBron James gets all the fanfare. You know, is it fair that he's, you know, gone to 9 straight NBA finals? You know, he brings that sort of allure. He's a champion, you know. So, you know, here in this case, we actually have three superstars. And, you know, and there are a couple other superstars that if they beat these superstars, then they become superstars. So I think it just has a little bit more of an allure in that way, in that, you know, we can see and be familiar with the stars that we're watching. Whereas on the women's side, I think there has been a void of a dominant figure, and no one can really get behind anyone because it's very spread and you don't know what's going to really happen. And not that anyone wants to know what's going to happen, but, you know, the fanfare, I can't tell you how much on Twitter, on Instagram, people were so excited about Djokovic and Nadal. Now, it didn't pan out, but all, even regular sports fans, were very, very intrigued by how this one would play out. Mm-hmm. So I think it brings a type of exposure that you don't get when there's too much parity. So, you know, I like it. I just wish it was fairer in the ways that I was mentioning earlier, which is, you know, that team environment, you know, the guys that are playing and, you know, they just can't afford playing at a certain level. It's not fair. They don't have the masseuse and the trainer and the, you know, the guru and the coach and the hitting partner and this one and that one and that one.
Yes.
And they have to do so many of the things on their own that they don't have the luxury to do that. So I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. So Parsa, before we sign off for this week, what are your thoughts on now the GOAT debate? Do you think Djokovic, at 31, turning 32, I think, in April, let's say he plays for another 2 or 3 years, he's got another 12 Grand Slams to get 5. basically got to win half of those. Does he break Federer's record? I'll tell you what I think right now. Maximum Federer gets one more. I don't even think he will, but maximum he gets one more to 21. That's my opinion. Because I think he's done after next year. I think Nadal, maximum he has two left. So he gets to 19. If he absolutely goes next level, maybe 20. Maybe 20, but I don't think so. So I think he's going to kind of max out at 19. So he got 21, 19. Then Djokovic. This for me is very interesting because I really don't think anybody can stand in his way right now unless something really changes quickly. And I think he can at least win five or six more. You know what I mean? And I mean, I don't know. I think that if he plays till 34, if he wants to do that, he can probably end up with maybe 22. Something like that. I don't know what, you know, just end off here. What are your thoughts on that?
It depends yeah. Who's coming up. You know, his negative is that he's got obviously Nadal, you know, chomping at the bit, and then he's got the young gen, next gen guys that are definitely improving and steadily getting up there. So he's got to pick up these titles pretty quickly if he wants to get into those numbers. So I think it's ambitious. Because the minute he slows down or he gets a little injured, he's not going to be able to play this type of dominant tennis that he played in Australia. So, you know, I don't know. I think that would be pretty tough, to be honest with you.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, obviously on the horizon, February is an interesting month. We got a bunch of WTA events and ATP Tour events all over South America, Russia, everywhere, Dubai, Rotterdam. So it's, you know, enough to keep us busy before we return with March Madness and Indian Wells in Miami with spring on the horizon and everybody starts to get in a little bit of a better mood. And that's when you'll hear back from Parsa and I. So Parsa, again, thank you so much for joining us this week. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody out there for listening. Make sure to hit Parsa up at Parsa Sammy on Instagram and Twitter. Myself at On Mars on Instagram, and you can follow us on Twitter at Tennis Connected. Be good. Enjoy the month of February. If you guys have any questions or emails, make sure to hit us up like you always do. You can also download this podcast on iTunes and Android. And lastly, a big shout out to Top Notch Tennis Tours. For anybody who has any travel inquiries, make sure you get them up for the Indian Wells. Thank you again. And we'll be right back.